Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Laura.
And I'm Amity. Let's get started. Today, we're going to finish up The Moffats by Eleanor Estes. Hopefully, if you've been following along with us, if you've been reading along with it, you are loving it as much as we do. If you are not reading it, then honestly, you could probably just listen and you get, if you have children in your life at all, you'll at least pick up a copy and read this book to those children because it is just so sweet. And I feel like as children listen to it, they will feel very understood. It's just, it's so cute. And she just, especially little Janie Moffat, because Janie is Eleanor as a little girl. So it's like she totally remembers all the little thoughts that she had. And as I read it, I'm like, I totally had like such similar, you know, not the same because my life wasn't the exact same, but very similar, just kind of like weird, just weird thoughts, whatever, but just very little kiddish. It's so funny. It's
I think especially in this last section, I can see like experiences I had with other little kids and like, this is how they act. One interesting thing is I happened to listen to a little bit of the audiobook today just because I wanted to refresh myself and I was driving and it's very cute. It has like a narrator, but then it also has other little kids like say when the kids speak, they speak. It's really cute.
Yeah.
As I was listening to it, I thought this would be something Presley could listen to because it's engaging.
Yeah. Different voices. And I think the narrator does such a good job. Like I really enjoy listening to her. She has a really good, I don't know. She just enunciates everything really well. And I enjoy it.
I liked it. I thought I was impressed. So I was just thinking I might turn that on for her sometime in the car.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with chapter 9, Share and Share Alike. These were my favorite chapters. I think these last four, they were just, it just like kind of brought it all home. It's very cute.
Yeah.
It's now springtime and Jane is sitting out on her little hitching post, which she sits on a lot. And I just think that's funny that she has this little spot in front of her house that she likes to sit on. And the illustrations show, it looks kind of high.
I know. It is a hitching post. So
yeah, not very wide. So she's like barely sitting on it. So anyways, it's kind of funny. So the boys are practicing on their stilts. She describes it. It's funny, like they walk okay in the beginning and then their legs like slowly get wider and wider until they can't walk anymore. And my dad was a plasterer when I was growing up. And so I learned how to walk on stilts when I was like,
oh.
Anyways, this is not as hard as it looks. I don't know. I guess it's pretty easy, but also dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you trip on stuff very easily, but they are looking at the for sale sign in the front of their house. And I think this is like the theme that just like goes through the whole book. It's just like their impending doom of the house is going to sell. Jane wants Joe to just tear it down, but he decides like he goes and he changes the S to a dollar sign and he's just kind of being funny. Mr. Bruni, he's the grocery man, and he comes by and he leaves his horse and wagon out near their house. And the Moffats call his horse the Dancy Horse. So I wonder if he's one of those horses like in the parades that dance.
Maybe so.
Or it just moves around a lot when he walks. And so Mr. Bruni gets out to deliver some groceries to a neighbor. And then the horse and the wagon is left out there alone. And this is when Jane like goes into her imagination. And she's watching the horse and she's imagining all these different things. But she ends up imagining that he is a bridge. And she needs to walk under him. And just as she's walking under the horse, he must be pretty tall. Mama comes to the window and can you imagine? As a kid, you are warned about horses. Like you don't walk behind them.
Especially here because, you know, horses surround them. Like they're everywhere.
She should know better. Yeah, Mama comes to the window. And just as she's like, Mama's like commenting on winter being over and some new work that she's going to get. And then she sees Jane walking under the horse. And of course, she gets on to her. Jane's like, she says, don't ever do that again. Jane's like, that's fine. I just needed to do it once. Even though mom is worried that she is going to do it again, Jane knows that she doesn't need to do it again. It just popped into her head. She needed to do it. Now it's done. And that's how kids are too. Like, I just needed to do it
Yeah,
once.
just super curious, needed to try it. It's the little scientist in them. They've got to
Yes.
test it out.
Presley's favorite thing to say is, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I don't care if it was fun.
Care.
Melma doesn't want Jane to do this again. And so she decides she's going to send her on an errand. She wants her to go to Tilly. I don't know how to say that.
I just say it
Cadwallader?
Cadwallader. Yeah, I think that's what it Cadwallader.
Cadwallader. Tilly Cadwallader's to try on a sleeve for length. She tells her to, like, you've got to be really careful with it because there isn't any more satin. And so if something happens to it, we're going to be in trouble. When she gets to the Cadwallader's, Tilly comes to the door and she ends up trying on the sleeve. All the girls come out. So this is a family of like seven girls. And so all the girls, she comes to the door, all the girls come out too. So she tries on the sleeve and then the girls start like kind of playing like they're getting married. So Mrs. Moffat is sewing a wedding dress. And then I think all of like the bridesmaids and all the dresses for the wedding. And so the girls, like, they take the curtains and put them over Tilly's head, and then they all have to try it. One of them jumps on the organ and starts playing Here Comes the Bride. As Jane leaves, they give her a nickel and out of the bank, like a
Like a
bank.
little piggy bank, only it's made out of an orange.
I know. And she's like, so she fishes this nickel out, but they're like, well, how did you make that? And she's like, well, I just dug everything out. And I just thought that was kind of funny. Like, I mean, I guess an orange peel would like dry.
In fact, I'm sitting here in my room, and on the floor,
There's orange peels.
there is an orange peel. My entire house is a disaster, and it is as hard as a rock. So yes, I could imagine a little orange peel bank like totally working. It's hilarious.
That's just funny. I just wouldn't have, that's something I never thought of. So on the way home, she's got this nickel and she's thinking about how she's going to buy something for everybody at Mr. Bruni's store on his way home. She thinks about how great it is that there's four of them because it, you know, if there were seven of them, like there were at the Cadwalladers, that wouldn't, you couldn't divide a nickel up by seven very easily. But then she thinks about how good an ice cream cone would be. And an ice cream cone is that whole nickel. So she ends up buying the ice cream cone. And at first she's enjoying it and then starts to not taste quite so good. The more her guilt builds up, she probably should have bought something for all of them. When she gets home, I loved this part of the story. When she gets home, she sees that Catherine the cat had had four new kittens. She says, even the cat shares. Like the cat knows that she's supposed to provide four kittens. And every year, that's what she does. She gives them four kittens. What's funny to me is that, okay, so each year when she has the kittens, they play a game that helps them decide which cat is going to go to which child, even though eventually they're going to get rid of them anyways. So I kind of was like, I don't know. Like, it's hard for kids to get attached to a kitten and then get rid of it, but they put
Yeah.
themselves through this torture anyways. They make up names for each of the kittens and then they place those names in a hat and then they draw one out and they put that kitten in the middle of the room and all four of the kids sit in the corner of the room and they call to the kitten, whichever it comes to, that's their cat. So this time they all want this little gray kitten because it has so much personality already, which is funny because, you know, we just got kittens and like I wouldn't have thought a few months ago, like a cat has personality. Oh yeah. Like we went to look at kittens and I was like, okay, we want this one. We brought her home and she just has the best personality ever.
Oh, that's so cute.
Last night, Charlie was telling me, she's funny. She comes in and she caresses your face. Very strange. Like she puts paws on her face and she like just kind of gently, like no claws or anything, she gently like her, and that's what exactly as she does. Charlie says, she comes and she caresses my face and then she goes to sleep. And I'm like, she totally does. It's the cutest
That
little
is so cute. Oh my gosh.
and she's so gentle. Like Presley tortures her and she never does anything to her. So they've got the four kids out on the corners of the room, the kitten in the middle, whichever one comes to them, that's who gets the cat. They all want the gray cat. But Jane realizes, like, I want the gray cat, but I don't really deserve it because I didn't share a treat with my brother and sisters. So they play this little game. Jane does end up with the little gray cat that they named Boots. She thinks this is probably going to make it harder for me to let it go because I got the one that I wanted, but She gets it anyways. And so after the game, they kind of all go back to doing what they were doing. And Jane kind of looks back at the day like, this was a strange day. Like, look at all the weird stuff that happened.
Yes. What a mixed up sort of day it had been. This day she had walked under a horse and won Boots, the sweetest of all kittens, though she didn't deserve it. It's just so funny.
I loved it. I thought it was just so cute. I can imagine being the mom looking out the window and seeing her walk under a horse. I can imagine being Jane and like squandering your money.
And then, of course, like the fact that she actually felt guilty about it, because the rule in their house is share and share alike. And that's just sort of drilled into them, which is not a bad thing to be drilled into. And so she has a very strong conscience about this and is like, so many kids, mine included, would be like, well, I got the 5 cents. It's my 5 cents. So it's fine if I buy something for me. But these kids are like, well, no, I've been blessed. I'm fortunate. I should share that, you know? Oh my gosh. How do we do it? I've said it so many times. The way that she writes is just, it's so like on point. It's so cute, so hilarious. So when she goes to the Cadwaladers, okay, and their names are hilarious. There's Tilly, Millie, Molly, Polly, Lolly, Ollie, and Nellie. And they decide to play bride. And so, like you said, they grab the curtain and the sleeve with the satin sleeve and the lace curtain on. It's like, you can just, they're just so serious about it. They're like, oh, yes, we're going to play bride. They have one sleeve and they have a lace curtain like over their heads. But yes, they're ready. You know, oh, their imagination fills in the many gaps.
Another spot in this in these chapters was like later on when they're riding the trolley. It's like they're waiting for the trolley and they are occupied by like the smallest little things, like a piece of red glass that they're looking through and like some foil from a candy wrapper. And it's just like the times are a little different now.
Yes. Oh, but there's so many times that I wish we could have that simplicity. There's a lot of things that, you know, I'm glad are different, but I do wish we sort of had that same kind of simplicity. I think it made better people in general. Chapter 10. This one is so funny. It's called Mud and Murdocks. So, of course, the uniting theme through this entire book, the house is for sale. The kids are just, they hate that. They hate the sign. They sometimes throw rocks at it. It's springtime, and so the weather's nicer. So a lot more people are coming to see the house. And there's one family in particular who is there constantly, the Murdochs. And Janie kind of blames herself for this because she feels like she's the one who drew attention to it. Because there was one day she was just so sick of the for sale sign, she started to just throw mud at it. And her mother was like, you can't do that. So she gave her a big bucket of soapy water and was like, you need to wash it. As she's out there scrubbing the mud off the sign, the Murdochs happen to be walking by. And I think she blames herself because just her being out there is what drew attention to the sign. And so the Murdochs saw that and they're like, oh, look, this house is for sale. And then hardly a day in the week went by without all the Murdochs or some of the Murdochs attacking the Moffats with their endless questions. So they'd always be asking questions about the house. They'd always be coming to look at the house. One day, Mrs. Murdoch would be like, no, it won't work because of this and this. And Mr. Murdoch would be like, well, but yeah, it'd be okay. And then another day, Mr. Murdoch would be having doubts and Mrs. Murdoch would fill up. The Moffats were just sick of it because they're always there. They're always inspecting. They're always finding something wrong with it, something right with it. And if they like, they left for a while, they'd often come home and find the Murdochs sitting on their porch, just waiting. I just feel the annoyance. Like, I feel it. So one day, even Mama is just like so annoyed. So she even goes and talks to Dr. Whitty and she's like, these people are driving us crazy. Like, it's got to stop. He's like, well, I am trying to sell it. I'll do the best I can. And it did get a little bit better. But instead, what they would do is just like stand outside the house and act like they were martyrs or something. So little Letitia Murdoch is the most persistent. She's there the most. And she was the one that was in the To a Wild Rose dance with Janie. So we did meet her earlier on, but didn't think much of her. And she is just next level. Again, you can kind of imagine this. I think everybody has had a Letitia in their life in one way or another at some point or another. because she's somebody that will come. As soon as they see her coming, they will all hide in little corners of the house that can't be seen from the windows, because she'll come and knock on the door, knock on the door, knock on the door. She'll yell for them. Then she'll go around and look through all the windows and yell at them. She'll ring the doorbell. She'll go to the back door, and then she'll just like sit on the porch forever. And then after a long time, they'll look out, she's sitting on the porch, and sometimes she'll catch them actually being there. And then sometimes when she actually does come in, she will scream triumphantly, "I got in." Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You can't make this kind of thing up, because we all know it's true. Like, we all know that this totally happens. So you know that this happened, and that Eleanor Estes totally experienced this with somebody. One day, Letitia is just sitting out on the hitching post in front of their house. And again, this has to be super annoying too, because they're probably like, well, we can't like actually kick her off because the hitching post doesn't really belong to us, but that's our hitching post at the same time, you know?
It's like when somebody parks in front of your house, like it drives me nuts when somebody parks. We have three kids with three cars that have to park in front of our house. So when people park there, it makes me really mad. Anyways, similar. Yeah,
no. And that's like happened right now in our neighborhood, because our neighbors that we're good friends with, there's this guy who has a white truck, and he would just like park right in front of their house. And then he would just leave it for weeks. And finally they talked to him. They're like, you need to stop. Or they would park their cars there. And now he parks right across the street, right in front of our house. And of course, these are neighborhood streets, so they're not as narrow as like the streets in Eugene, but it's still a neighborhood street. So there's not a lot of space, and it's directly across from our driveway. So I'm backing a Suburban out of the driveway, and I just have to be very careful all the time. It's just right there, and he never moved it. I don't know what the point of this truck is. It's very
It's just
annoying.
funny, because it's like this unspoken law. This hitching post is theirs. Like, it's not really theirs, but it's
not theirs.
So
but it's
stop it.
Theirs. So she has taken it over whenever she can. When she can't get into the house, she just goes, sits on the hitching post. So Janie is out there trying to ignore the fact that Letitia is sitting there, and she sees an airplane. And remember, this is early 20th century, so they're not seeing airplanes very often. So when they do, it's like, whoa, this is very much a novelty. And she's watching the airplane. She's wishing she could fly. And she decides to make her doll, Hildegard, fly. She wasn't thinking very well, because I think that Hildegard might be a porcelain doll. She makes Hildegard fly, and then is so distraught when Hildegard falls on the sidewalk and her head breaks off. She's kind of horrified and can't even, she's like, why didn't you fly? Jeez, Hildegard, it's all your fault. But then she like recovers, and she's like, well, now she can be Madame for me when I make clothes for my other dolls. And of course, Letitia's like, what to do? Break your doll? Says Jane, regarded Letitia resentfully. It was horrible to think that anyone had been watching her, let alone that Letitia. So Jane's like, no. And she resolves she must get rid of Letitia. And so she goes and recruits Rufus. They come back around to the front of the house. And she says, hey, Letitia, I'm going to hypnotize Rufus. I can hypnotize anybody. And I'm going to hypnotize Rufus so he thinks he's a dog. Again, she's like pre-arranged this with Rufus. So she's like, she gets all like mysterious and sort of witchy. And she's like, you're a dog. You're a dog. You're a dog. And she repeats it until after a while, Rufus like starts wagging his butt like he's wagging a tail. And then he starts barking, and he starts like getting really into this role until he like starts riles up the dogs around the neighborhood even. And then he starts going for Letitia's sock, and Letitia's like, he needs to leave me alone. He needs to stop that. And Janie says, well, he can't until I unhypnotize him. And then Jane's like, shall I hypnotize him into a lion? And Letitia's like, I got to go home. Oh, must you go so soon, says Jane. And then all of a sudden she's like, maybe if I change you into a cat, the dog will chase you up a tree. And she starts doing her little voodoo poses and whatever. And Letitia kind of screams and gets out of there. And they're like, we got rid of her for today.
Yes, that chapter was hilarious. I'm trying to think about like being a kid, you know, we have these neighbors down the street that would like, I don't know, kids are mean. This is funny because they're trying to get rid of her. She's annoying. But like sometimes kids can do this kind of stuff to be mean.
Just mean for no reason.
But I remember like these two girls that lived down the street from us, they would tell, like, they had this nicest dog, but they would tell him, sick him, like at us. And I was always
Oh
like,
my gosh.
I mean, the dog never did anything, but like, it scared
Yeah.
me. I was kind of
Yeah, and the fact they
dogs.
would do that, yuck.
Just stuff like that. But like, as a kid, did you ever do anything like this where you would like involve your siblings to like trick people? Or I don't remember doing that, but.
Okay, so the one thing that I can think of, we did a few things, and it kind of had to do with the house thing too. So growing up, we had our house, and then there was a vacant lot on either side of our house. Okay, and our house was like on a hill. It was very difficult to landscape and everything. Oh my gosh. So people, it wasn't really a hot commodity anyway, but we had found out that this one lot on the left side was going up for sale and that people were interested in it. And we were horrified because that was like the best place to play. Like we had dug all these holes and we had like this whole play area that we just, all this cactus, it's great. And so we spent any free time that we may have had, we spent playing in this vacant lot. And so when we heard that somebody was going to buy it, we were like, no, like that's horrible. And so we conspired and did the best thing that we could. And we gathered all these rocks because there's rocks everywhere. Like the soil is horrible. There's rocks everywhere. We built a sign with the rocks saying, we don't want a house here. That's a lot of words with rocks, but we did it. I think about it now, I'm like, oh my gosh, what in the world? So we did do that. But then this little girl across the street, her dad was he was a contractor. And I don't know that he would have built that house anyway, but he was upset about our sign. And so his little girl took her big wheel bike and rode over our sign with her big wheel bike to ruin it. And she was like, my dad says this is a bad sign. We just went back and fixed our sign, and nobody moved there.
Can you imagine though, like people that come and look at it and they're like, there's, it says in rocks, we don't want to have a house here.
I'm probably a little creepy, like, okay, what in the world? I don't think there's a house there yet. Yeah, there's still not a house there. We did
Probably took you all day too, like.
good. Oh, yeah. I think it took a couple of days between gathering all the rocks because we had like buckets of rocks. It was a lot of rocks.
Yeah, but I think kids do that all the time. They're like, get their siblings to like, what, go along with whatever and trick people,
Yeah.
other kids. So loved chapter 11.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
The new Second Avenue trolley line. So school's out for summer. Just make me think of a song. School's out for summer. Sylvie has gone to camp for a week, and the other three children are going to go down to Sandy Beach for the day to have a picnic. And it used to be this like really long walk there, and like Rufus was too little, and so they'd have to pull him in a wagon, but now he could walk there because he's older. Also, now there's a new trolley line, and it says it would like take no time at all to get down there as long as they don't hit a red light. If they hit the red light and they have to wait for the trolley to come back from the other way, they might as well have walked there. But they're like,
Yeah.
nice thing about it is you can read a book, you can knit, you can like, it's just exciting, right? More exciting than
And
walking.
it still ends up saving you time, even if you have to wait.
Kind of reminds me of walking to the high school from here, like, because we live less than a block off of the main road. And so basically, it's just, you just have to go down the main road to high school. And some days, it would be quicker to walk than to drive.
Yeah, seriously.
Kind of funny.
Some of the
But,
crazy traffic.
and at first, when I was reading this, I was like, well, I listened to it first and then I read it. And when I listened to it, I didn't understand, like, that most trolleys have two tracks. Here they just have the one, and but they have trolleys going north and south.
Right.
So if they can't be going on the same track at the same time, so one has to stop and wait on the switch line
Yeah.
while the other one is coming down the main track. Anyways, this day Mama is staying home to do some sewing, and I thought it was a cute little addition that she's like sneezing her head off with hay fever.
Poor thing.
It's things like this that really were happening. Like she put that in
I
there because
know.
her mother had hay
Yeah.
fever. So Mama's staying home. She gives them each a nickel and tells them to have a good time. I love what Jane says here. She says, don't let those Murdochs buy our house. Lock the doors and pretend you aren't home if they come back again.
Oh.
Hide. The kids, they disagree on how to spend their nickels. Joe and Jane wants to go get ice cream cones, but Rufus wants to ride the trolley. He says he's going to ride it with or without them. And he's kind of interested in how they're going to handle those red lights. Because he's like, Usually there's two tracks. What are they going to do? And then he also says, like, someday I might want to be a motor man. I got to see how this works. So they all agree that they're going to ride the trolley. When they get on the trolley, the motor man gives Rufus his nickel back and says, you don't have to pay until you're six. And they all know he's six. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, he just puts his nickel back in his pocket and he kind of looks at Joe and Jane like, I got away with something.
It's so funny because they're such good kids. They are such good kids. It's things like this that you're like, oh, they're also real. I think she is basing these people on real people in her life. Like, it really is her sort of autobiography in a way.
Isn't this something most kids would do? Most kids would be like, oh, I got away with something. But it reminded me of that talk that is called, like, would you sell your soul for a nickel? So yes, this is what normal kids.
Oh, man. Yes.
But do you remember that talk where the boy's going to the movies and it's like a certain price if you're under a certain age, and he's able to get like all these treats with his allowance that he gets every week. And then this, he turns the next age, and then the price goes way up. And he's like, he gets there and he's like, I last week got in just fine. And if I tell him how old I am, actually, I can't buy all these treats that I usually get. So he has to decide what he's going to do. And anyways, I just think that's funny. Like, at what age do you think a kid then thinks about it harder?
I mean, there is data that shows at age 8 that they really, it clicks for them what
If they
right
think,
and wrong is.
I mean,
It's
even as
interesting.
adults, though, don't you like sometimes things like that happen and you think, I've thought of, something happens at Walmart where you don't get charged or something. And sometimes it's like, I just don't have time to go back in and tell them or whatever. And it's like, I have to go back in and tell them that they didn't charge me for this or whatever.
I
And it's
know, or else
so
it's just
annoying.
gonna nag at you anyway, and so it's
Yes.
not worth the torture. Yeah.
Even as adults, I think we're tempted to be like, hey, I'll just put that back in my pocket.
Their problem, not mine,
Yeah,
but
exactly.
yes.
So cute though, that how he looks at them like, well, I just got away with something. When they get on the car, everybody else is like kind of in the back of the car, but they sit in the front because I think they don't want to miss anything. They're happy to see that like the green light is on when they start going because they're like, okay, we're just going to get on through and not get stopped. But then just as he steps on like the, I don't know, it's probably not gas, right? But like just as he starts going, the red light flashes on, which means he should stop. But he doesn't stop. Can you imagine? Like, you're supposed to be stopping. What are you doing? I would be like, I would just lose it. The whole time he's coming down the tracks and he's muttering about being made to wait every day while the other trolley never waits. He says he told the chief about it, and the chief is like, you just need to fight it out for yourself, which I think may not have been a good idea to tell him
No.
that. Bad idea. And then he ends his little speech with, I'll show him. So they look down the tracks and see that the other car is coming towards them, and both trolley cars are like ringing their bell. It's like, we're coming, we're coming. It's like they're playing chicken. And the kids are doing nothing. They're just sitting there. Like, I'm sure they're thinking, their eyes are wide, but they're not saying anything. But the other passengers are running up to the motorman and asking him to stop. And it says, so the passengers all ran to the back of the car to get as far as possible from what looked like an inevitable crash. Some uttered silent prayers. Like, if he's not going to stop, we're getting to the back of the car because too bad they can't like jump off. But everyone outside the trolleys are watching too, and they're yelling, go back, go back. And they even like called the fire department, which what is he going to do? I mean, this is coming to a head here. But as the cars approach each other, then they slow down and then they stop when they're nose to nose. And the fire department arrives. They're pretty quick, I guess. And they're looking everywhere for a fire. Like, where's the fire? We don't understand why we got called. But the motorman that's on the Moffitt's trolley, he's like an older guy. They call the other one the enemy trolley. And that driver is a younger man. And so this is what the older man says. Yeah, you young whippersnapper. I saw the light all right, all right. Same as I do every trip. And I'm sick of seeing those red lights. See? You're supposed to wait up there at the upper switch half the time, at least until 2:30. Do you ever do it? No, you do not. My people wants to get home as much as yours wants to be off. if it's a 50-50 proposition, now back up your car to the other switch. You're all so funny. And they also call each other sardine.
The young guy calls the old guy old sardine, and the old guy calls the young guy young whippersnapper.
Yes.
So,
So the young motorman sees that the older man is not going to back down. And he actually knows that the older man is right. So the chief had just told him the other day that he needed to wait at the switch until 2:30. And if the other car wasn't coming, then he could go on. But he never waits. Can you imagine
yeah.
working with somebody like that just like,
No. And that, yeah.
ugh.
And that's another thing. I'm sure everybody's had an experience with somebody like that who's just like very entitled and like, no, I'm gonna do what I wanna do.
Other drivers on the road.
Oh, yeah.
So the younger man then concedes and he takes, and I thought this was kind of funny too, like he takes his driving equipment to the other end. So they must just like move their stuff like to one end or the other, whichever direction they're going. And he backs the car the other way, or drives it the other way. And the older man is right behind him, all but butting him in the rear like an angry bull. He's right behind him the whole way. In the end, the kids are happy that they spent their nickel on this exciting trolley ride. And now they have a story to tell their mama.
Yes.
It just kind of reminded me of the other day, a couple weeks ago, David and I went on a like our anniversary trip to the coast, and the building we were staying in, the hotel, caught on fire in the middle of the night. So we were outside all night watching it. And my mom later I was like, oh, I was freezing. She's like, well, why didn't you get in the car? And I was like, it was very exciting watching what was going on.
The excitement.
Yeah.
That is really funny.
And the whole night I kept thinking, well, we have a story to tell the kids when we get home.
Yeah, definitely made the whole weekend a lot more exciting.
Yeah, we got a,
That's so funny.
we didn't have to pay for that night. We didn't have a room. Anyways, it was kind of an exciting night. But ever think about that kind of stuff when exciting things are happening? You're like, well, at least I have something to tell them.
For sure. Now I can't think of a specific example, but if anything out of pocket happens, I'm like, oh, this will be a fun story to tell. This is not nearly as exciting as the hotel catching on fire or anything like that. But well, two things. A lot of things randomly will happen when I'm running really early in the morning. So actually yesterday we just got dumped on so much snow. And I didn't realize how much snow had dumped during the night. And that I was like, no, I'm running to the gym. It's about a 6 mile run. So I mean I put on layers and I got out there and I was like, oh wow. Okay. It's 4:40 in the morning. The plows have not been out yet. And there are plows because we get lots of snow, but certainly not on neighborhood streets. So that was a bit of an adventure. And I was like, this, I really was, and like I said, it's not nearly as exciting as anything that you experienced or these guys experienced. But the whole time I'm like, this is going to be so fun to tell the kids about because I'm just bounding through the snow for 6 miles and like a little bit of slipping and sliding and hoping I don't just jump right into a ditch. But yeah, it was exciting. It was fun. And I did find out that my shoes are waterproof because that was my biggest thing. I was like, okay, like I'll do this, but my feet are going to be so cold. But actually, like my shoes, I didn't even know they were, but my running shoes are pretty awesome because they kept my feet dry. You know, a little bit gets in
On top.
around where your feet go in. Yeah. But other than that, it was awesome.
So you run
So,
to the gym and then what?
and then work out.
And then what?
So then, well, sometimes it just depends on the day. But I had actually taken, because I worked yesterday morning, like opened. And so I had actually taken a bag of my stuff and just showered there after I was done with my workout. I took a bag of my stuff the night before, I should say. But then there's sometimes I'll run there, I work out. And then Ken, he comes and works out too. It's just a little bit later. And then he'll meet me and we'll go home
Drive
or,
home together.
yeah, and
Like
drive home.
you
Yeah.
run
So,
6 miles to the gym and then you don't have a car.
like I said, sometimes I just run home too. It just depends on how I'm feeling. It's exhilarating. Love it.
Wow.
But then another time I was running along, it's super, super dark. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw all this movement. I was like, oh, you know, kind of scary. And there's like five deer just in the yard of the house that I'm running right by. They're just bouncing around.
Well, I see stuff like, because I drive all over the place, so I see stuff a lot. And like, I'll see a homeless lady changing her underwear on the street in Salem.
Okay.
And it happened. And I'm talking to David on the phone. I'm like, you won't believe what I'm watching.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Live in Oregon.
Yes, you do. Oh
That
my
was the
goodness.
funny thing. Like, missionaries that get called to Oregon come here. And, I grew up here. And so I lived in Utah for like 3 years. But other than that, I've lived in Oregon my whole life. They were like, I can't believe how many homeless people there are. I can't believe this. And I'm like, this isn't a thing other places. And they're like, no, I didn't know
No.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I mean like in some places of Salt Lake, you'll see
Yeah.
some, but other than that, no.
And like, I have a friend in Texas that texted me this TikTok of this lady driving down a Portland street where there was like these super run down like RVs on the side of the streets, on both sides of the streets, and they line the streets, And she's like, what the heck? And I go, oh, I know exactly where that is. I drive by it all the time. And I said to her, you don't have this problem? She's like, no.
Yeah, is that the place kind of like by Walmart and the gymnastics? Well, that's where they used to park. Is it that one? Yeah.
Well, I think it's like, I'm trying to think where it is. Anyways, but there's like several spots in Portland that are like
Yeah,
that.
there probably are. Yeah. Oh, she was in Portland.
She
Oh,
was
because
sending a
in
TikTok from Portland. Yeah.
from oh, okay. Yeah. Because in Eugene, there's that too.
Oh,
There's a
yes.
couple of, yeah, there's a few streets that are just lined with RVs, and you're like, what in the?
Yes, down by Walmart. Yes, here in
Yeah.
Eugene. But like here too, we have these camps. And they'll like people come in and move them, and they just like move across the street, and it's like it's just crazy. So
Yeah.
I was just surprised that that isn't a problem other places. Solid. So
Well, I think the thing is that the word gets out that in Eugene, nothing ever really happened. So that's where everybody goes.
well, and it's also a good climate here for living out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like,
That's
I
true.
wouldn't want to live outside in Utah.
No.
You'd
Well, I
die.
wouldn't want to live outside in Eugene either. Like, just you bring it on all the
You
time.
want to be in
But
California. That digressed, but.
fascinating topic, though. It's very interesting. Last chapter, chapter 12, is called The Last Chapter in the Yellow House. Unfortunately, the Murdochs did buy the house. And it's one of those things you're like, that would be a hard pill to swallow. Be like, all right, they did end up with it. Just never look them in the eyes. They finally came through. They decided to take it. And so the Moffats were given about a month to find some place and move out. And so they did. They found a little house. And the thing about it is that it doesn't have much of a backyard. Instead, it has a big front yard. So it's like very removed from the street. And the kids are like, we're like sitting right in everybody's backyards, but it's going to be fine. Today is moving day. And they're all kind of feeling very sad, obviously, and a little nostalgic. They're pretty much all ready. They've got everything packed up. They're ready, but the moving truck hasn't come yet. And so Mama says, Janie, go to I Bimber's moving company and tell them that we're ready. And so Jane was glad to have something to do. So she on an errand to go and tell the moving company that they're ready. So she does that. And then she decides to go visit the new house. Okay. And while she's doing it, she's playing this little game of kicking the stone around. And she has this little competition with herself. If it lands on the right side of the pavement more often than the left, it would turn into a nugget of gold. I feel like we've all done something similar to that. We come up with these little competitions with ourselves or make up these things. She thinks about growing up and losing your sense of fun. She's like, how could I ever get to the point where I'm not going to play cops and robbers? Or never walk fences or never play baseball. But she's like, it's kind of inevitable though. Because she's observed that Sylvie is getting older and there's still some things she does, but there's a lot of things she just doesn't do anymore. And it's funny because I actually totally remember having such similar thoughts going, when I'm a grown up, I'm not gonna stop playing games. I'm gonna totally go out and be the mom that plays hide and seek with my kids. I'm going to jump in the pool with my kids. I'm going to do all these things. I'm not going to be the boring adult because adults are just boring. I play with my kids a lot. I actually do, but not as much as I thought I would. Like there's still times I'm like, hey, you guys go play because I'm going to clean. How boring is that and not fun?
That's super
But
boring, Mom.
oh.
I don't like to play. And I remember the same thing. Like, I thought when I was younger, I was going to be like the cool mom. I was going to be the cool adult, but I'm totally not.
Well, I think you just expect that you're going to have as much energy as an adult as you do when you're little. And I think the big problem is that as adults, we're weighed down with all the stupid adult cares that we have. And so, yeah, sometimes we can get in and play, but a lot of times we don't have time and we are so weighed down that the energy level is just not there for that kind of play, which I wish that it was because the kids sure have a lot of fun. But she gets to the house where they're going to be moving. Of course, what does she do? She bends over and looks at the house from between her legs. And so she's upside down and she's like, oh, it looks quite charming and rather like a picture postcard. She wondered if it would ever seem like home. She imagines coming home from school to see, how that would feel. And she realized she's just really sad. She's going to miss her house on New Dollar Street. But all of a sudden, she hears a voice says, "Are you crying? I never cry unless it's something just frightfully important." And so there's this little girl sitting in a tree in a yard that backs right up to the new yard that the Moffats are going to have. And so Janie meets Nancy. This little Nancy girl is just hilarious. She's like, "Well, I think it's great you're moving here." She says, "Say, what do you think about before you go to sleep?" And Jane doesn't really want to share because she thinks about being a princess with golden curls and a prince on a black horse riding down a wooded path, a meeting in the clearing by the cold, clear spring. These were the things she thought about before she went to sleep. Finally, she says, "I think I'm a princess with long golden curls riding on a white horse." And the little girl's like, "Oh, you do?" And Janie's afraid that she will make fun of her, but she doesn't. Instead, she shares that she dreams that she's a singer on a stage and everybody's clapping for her. And I think Janie sees immediately that they're going to get along really well. So she's pretty excited about that because she's like, maybe we can be best friends. Nancy's the one who suggests that. And that's so cute. So she goes back to her house. She's feeling a little bit better. The moving van is there. They're loading everything in. They say, "Hey, Moffats, you come sit on the van," because they were all going to ride the van to the new house together. Mama just says, "Have I forgotten anything?" They stopped for a moment and thought, no, nothing had been forgotten, nothing left behind. So they went out to the van. But then they suddenly realized that they'd forgotten Catherine the cat. So she comes, she jumps on, and they waved their handkerchiefs until they turned the corner from New Dollar Street into Elm Street. Now they could no longer see the yellow house. Goodbye, yellow house. Goodbye. And it's kind of a perfect and sweet ending to the whole book because there's a lot that ends the issue with their house being sold. They're now on a new street in a new house. And it kind of sets up a whole bunch of new things too, because it's a whole series of books. The rest of them are going to take place in their new house on Elm Street.
I like that she met a friend, and so it's like it's a bright future.
Yes, it totally is. And they have lots of sweet and good adventures in the new house.
I loved the part, and I'm trying to find it, but I can't, where the neighbor is like excited that they're moving, and then she's like, well, it'd be better too if like all these other kids moved away too.
Everybody
Then,
else would.
yes, then the street would be perfect. It
Those
was.
Moffats are moving away and it will be nice and quiet here. If only Peter Frost and the Pudgers would move away too and all those Cadwalladers, New Dollar Street wouldn't be so bad. If it was only me living here, this would be great.
Right.
So,
How many books are there? Four, five?
yeah,
Sorry.
in the Moffat series, okay, off the top of my head, there's, oh, let's see. The Middle Moffat, Rufus M., The Moffat Museum. Not all. Yeah, I guess so. So there's four.
Okay. I was thinking I should just listen to them because that like this book, I can't believe it. This book was 3 hours long or
Yeah.
something like that. And we talked
Yeah.
about it for at least 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funny. But anyways, I was just thinking this would be fun to listen to the rest of them. Such a cute book. And my
Yeah.
mom, she ended up in the hospital this week. And so I
Oh,
went
no.
Monday to see her and I stayed the night with her on Monday night in the hospital. And she was like, oh, I heard that book. And I was like, and she says she read it to us, but I do not remember. So
Okay.
she's like, oh, it's the lady that wrote the 100 Dresses. I'm like, yeah, it was so cute. So, and I have nothing for books that are like it. Other than ones we've said a million times, like,
I know. Well, like All of a Kind Family, there were so many parts in here that I was like, oh my gosh, that reminds me exactly of All of a Kind Family, which we've already covered. Well, another one I was thinking about is The Willoughbys. Hold on.
oh, I've never read that, but I do know it's a movie, right? Netflix made a movie.
Oh, did they really? Oh, you're right. Okay. The Willoughbys book by Lois Lowry. Yeah. And it's really cute and funny. Okay, here's a quick summary of the Willoughbys. So, again, by Lois Lowry. Abandoned by their ill-humored parents to the care of an odious nanny, Tim, the twins, Barnaby A and Barnaby B, and their sister Jane attempt to fulfill their roles as good old-fashioned children. Following the model set in lauded tales from A Christmas Carol to Mary Poppins, the four Willoughbys hope to attain their prescribed happy ending too, or at least a satisfyingly maudlin one. However, it is an unquestionably ruthless act that sets in motion the transformations that lead to their salvation and to happy endings for not only the four children, but their nanny, an abandoned baby, a candy magnate, and his long-lost son, too. It's replete with a tongue-in-cheek glossary and bibliography, this hilarious and decidedly old-fashioned parody, playful homage to classic works of children's literature. It's not like the sweet, cute, fun family book necessarily, but it is a bunch of children and they're just kind of funny antics. Another one that comes to mind, this is more modern, is The Incorrigible Children of Ashton Place.
I think I've read that for the first one.
Yeah, The Incorrigible Children of Ashton Place by Mary Rose Wood. It's like this large estate and this nanny comes there to watch these kids who are just crazy. They've like been raised out in the wild, so they act like wolves. So that one's kind of funny. So as far as mischievous children, there it is. And that one is a series too. And my kids, I've only read the first one to them, but they wanted the next ones and they've read those ones. They thought they were really funny.
Have you read The Vanderbeekers?
I haven't read that one. I totally own the book and I think I had one of my kids read it, but yeah, I haven't read that one. The Vanderbeekers of like 51st Street or yeah, something.
Vanderbeekers of 141st Street by
Okay.
Camilla Jan Glaser. That's another one I'd like to read.
It's one I need to read too. But yeah, Pippi Longstocking, that one's really funny. Like really funny.
Brought to mind like Amelia Bedelia. I don't know why. Just kind of made me think of her
Yeah.
getting into situations and funny stuff. I don't know.
And just the funny way that she thinks and that kids think. Yeah. Yeah, those are a few. And then, I mean, of course, just the rest of Eleanor Estes's books. All the Moffats, the Ginger Pie, the Pinkie Pie.
Yeah, I would say totally go pick up this book if you haven't. And I think kids would like it. I really do.
Oh, they do. It speaks to them. They get it. And I've always been kind of surprised like how much like Ginger Pie and Pinkie Pie are pretty big books. I personally don't think they're quite as cute and fun as like the Moffats. They're so cute and fun, but I don't know. I just love the Moffats. But I'm always surprised how much my kids like them to where we've read all of them a few times, you know? So
Ginger Pie and Pinkie Pie?
yeah.
Okay. Do they like those better than the Moffats, you think?
Or at least just as much.
Well, I own Ginger Pie, so I should pick that one up too and read it to
Yeah.
Presley. She's really good now about listening to picture books, but I'm not, I need
Good.
to stretch her a little bit.
Start finding those that are good stretcher books like Mercy Watson and My Father's Dragon, you know, because they still have the pictures, but there's just a lot more text.
We've
Just
read a
read
bunch
it
of
off.
Mercy Watson, so she likes those.
So I love Mercy Watson. So funny. Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So next week we begin To Kill a Mockingbird, right?
Yes. And we're going to do chapters 1 through 8 because it's going to be over 4 weeks. And so we needed like about 80 pages. So I went through and like kind of figured it out. So, well, yeah, next week we'll do chapters 1 through 8. That'll be
Cool.
my first time through To Kill a Mockingbird. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to talk about this as my book, but this week I've been listening to Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier because there's this Zoom thing I want to do at the end of the month. And so I'm going to read it and then I'm going to read it again for October. But I've never, Frankenstein was a big surprise to me for like as a classic. It was really good. Nothing like Rebecca. Rebecca is like so engaging and so beautifully written and like, anyways, so I'm kind of hoping that that's what To Kill a Mockingbird is like.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it will be. I think it will be.
We'll see. I'll let you know next
Good.
week
Okay.
after we've read 8 chapters.
Yes, fair enough.
Okay, so what are you reading?
Okay, so I decided to try something very different for me. I mean, I've read some like this, but this is called Red Rising by Pierce Brown. It was recommended to me by a friend that I work with. And yeah, she said that she just loved it. Okay, so it's like about all these people who live on Mars. It's these people who are making the surface of Mars livable for future generations. Definitely, there's the a caste system, and the main character is from the lowest caste. And so in a lot of ways, I think people compare it to sort of like the Hunger Games. There's also a comparison to like Ender's Game. So it's sort of that futuristic dystopian, somebody comes from the bottom all the way to the top. I'm not super far into it, but it's good so far. Like I said, it's different for me. I have read Ender's Game and the Hunger Games and things like that. But that's not in my normal wheelhouse. So
It's fun to read stuff that you don't normally read, isn't it? Like sometimes.
sometimes,
Sometimes
yeah.
it's like,
It takes me a little bit to get into it, just because I know like everybody's always recommending Brandon Sanderson. I know he must be amazing. I just can't get into it because I'm just not, that's just not my
have you tried?
cup of tea. Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Probably not as hard as I should or could. But
Charlie
have
loves,
you listened to any?
no, but Charlie loves him. And I mean, he's read five or six books in the last couple months, and
They're big books.
he bought Sydney and Audrey books for Christmas, Brandon Sanderson books for Christmas, and I'm
Yeah.
gonna try one, but
I totally am too. I need to. They always talk about how he's a fantastic world builder. And I'm just like, I just don't know if I have the patience for
for
that. Like, I,
world
yeah,
building.
like I can take it for, I love J.R.R. Tolkien. I love C.S. Lewis, but I feel like the way that they world build is so seamless. And I'm not even giving Brandon Sanderson a chance, but a lot of like fantasy and stuff that I read, it seems like they spend so much time building the world for you before you actually like get into the story. And it's like, okay, can we just get to the story now? It's so, like I said, I'm not even giving him a chance. So I need to.
I will try to. And if I would say, like, of course, we don't have time to sit and read books, but if audio doesn't work, sometimes paper will work. You know
Yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
totally.
different. For me, audio has to be super easy, super engaging, very interesting. And so paper would work better for me, probably, for something like that. Just because,
And I'm just the opposite. I feel like
Oh.
for me, the audio can be the one that's very difficult, complex, where the paper, it has to be a little more like just grab you and
Oh,
drag you along. So,
interesting. I would just say just switch. If it doesn't work, try a different avenue. And I don't know.
yeah, no, it's worth a try for sure. I will. I'm gonna do it this year. Read a Brandon Sanderson.
So I kind of am thinking about giving up podcasts
Oh,
for the
okay.
most part, like, or just toning it way down because I can listen to so many books in the time that I would listen to podcasts. And so, like,
Yeah.
I guess what I'm thinking is ones that are like just entertaining for me, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll probably still listen to ones that talk about books and church stuff, but like I've been listening to like the Myers Brothers podcast. It's called Family Trips, and then I listen to like sometimes I listen to Kelly Ripa, but they're just entertaining and it's just a waste of time. And it makes me like jealous of celebrities that have a lot of money. So it's like
Fair enough.
it's just upsetting. Like
Yeah.
when they talk about how they, yeah, we just bought a house next to our in-laws. So when we, go visit them, we have a place to stay. Like, you just bought a
Oh
house.
my gosh, you bought a
Right.
house as a place to stay. Okay.
That
Okay.
kind of stuff. It's like,
Yeah.
or they talk about, the trips they go on, and it's just like, okay, this is just making me upset. So anyways, I'm gonna give up that kind of stuff. But so what, that all to say, I read three books this week.
Gosh. Wow. Okay.
Because I didn't listen to any podcasts. So the book I'm going to talk about, though, is called Grimoire Girl, A Memoir of Magic and Mischief. And it's by Hilary Burton, who was an actress on One Tree Hill. And then
Okay.
she married Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who is like
Oh,
the most
yeah.
attractive actor ever, in my opinion. Anyways, and she's much younger than him. I think he's like probably 15 years older than her or whatever.
Okay.
She wrote a book, a memoir, a couple years ago about their farm that they built. They bought called and they named it Mischief Farm. And it's really cute. I really enjoyed it. And so this one just came out. And so anyways, a grimoire is a book of spells. She's an interesting lady. And so it was kind of fun. I'm not into all that also, but there were some parts of it that I just thought were really interesting. And so she's like telling you how to like compile a book of spells. And that's not, it's not really spells, but like just quotes and books that you like and like how to, I don't know. It was very interesting. A couple of things that stood out to me were she says to name your house. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, it sounds ridiculous because they have this farm and they're celebrities and have money or whatever. But like, I was thinking about that, like, okay, what would I name my house? I have no idea. But I'm going to come up with something. But what really stood out to me was when she talked about cooking. And she talked about when you use spices, you need to put them in your hand before you put them into the food because it like adds it like I don't know if it activates them or whatever, but like it's like putting love into the food that you're making. And I thought that was really cute. And then the other thing is she
Love
talked about like being in the kitchen because she thinks of herself as like a witch in the kitchen. And I was like,
it. And it's kind of true. Like, yeah, we're just like mixing potions.
yeah, like magic and like you're being magical. Like look what I mixed up and like put on the table for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
It just kind of made me think about putting in some more effort into the kitchen instead of just like, what can I dump in the crock pot and throw on the table for you guys? I don't know. I just kind of enjoyed it. It was really cute. I think this is a great book for my sister. I think my sister Emily would love it. I might have to buy it for her for her birthday or something, but it was just kind of cute. But so last night,
That sounds really cute.
I like looked up really good vegetable recipes. So that's one of my goals for the year is to make vegetables every night because I also stink at that. And so I found a recipe for one of those Brussels sprouts with pears and bacon.
Oh.
That's what it, and balsamic vinegar, and it was excellent. And I really felt
That wow.
like I made something like I was a witch in the kitchen.
Magic potion. Yes. I love it. I think we should all think of ourselves that way, that we're just brewing up these potions.
With
Yeah.
love.
With love.
Yes, creating magic. I mean, look what I did. It's like I put it on the table. And I said to them at the end of dinner last night, I said, do you guys notice I made you like a full-on dinner?
Acknowledge.
With like salad and a vegetable and chicken and rice.
Wow, that's awesome.
Anyways, it was really cute. If you're not weird about stuff like that, like witchy stuff, then I think it'd be a fun read.
That sounds super fun. And I actually love the idea of naming your house. I feel like I'd have to own my house first, but maybe not. Because like everybody used to name their house, you know? You read I mean, even like I was thinking about even the March family in Little Women, but that's the name of the house that the Alcotts lived in. And it's just the same name in the book and in real life. It's called Orchard House.
Oh.
And then throughout all Regency era books, you know, every house has a name, Netherfield Hall and
Oh, another thing she talked about
Pemberley.
that stuck out to me was like she really likes her house to be like comfortable and she doesn't care about like it doesn't need to be fancy or expensive, just like cozy and warm. And I was like, you can make anything, any house can be like that. Like cozy,
Yeah.
warm, inviting. It doesn't have to be remodeled or expensive. I liked that.
I think I like this lady.
I know she's very interesting. She's a very interesting lady, very different.
Yeah,
I
that's super fun. I love it.
know. Chapel. I don't know. We live on Chapel Drive, so I have no idea.
Chapel House.
Yeah.
See, that's the hard part. I'm really bad at coming up with names.
Me too.
So
It was a miracle we named this podcast.
and I always think it's a miracle that I named my children and still like their names.
That's easy.
I don't know. I
I had it. Well, that's not true because we had a hard time naming cats, but I felt like the kids got harder as they kept coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the more you have, the less names that are available. I don't know.
Yeah. That are actually like cool, good names. We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, chapters 1 through 8. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.